and injustice, but the climate crisis, it is a toxic mix that is destroying us. And so we got to move back, move forward. And so, yes, we need an infrastructure plan that has climate in it. We need to have a climate emergency. We need a Green New Deal. We need to get serious. This is ridiculous that we're sitting up here. People are on the road right now with no gas in their car. People are at home with no electricity, suffering in heat. We have seniors, and we're still maintaining the archaic views of the fossil fuel industry. That has got to stop now.
And is it your fear that similarly to what happened after Hurricane Katrina, that the crisis was used to implement anti-people policies, for instance, the elimination virtually of all public schools in New Orleans, that this crisis will be used in the same way by those in power?
Most definitely. Let me say this. After Katrina, we know the fossil fuel industry started to create the climate denial platform they were doing. Then they moved to they moved beyond that now, as well as the policies in the communities to literally destroy those communities. Literally rolling back from public housing, rolling back, closing down charity hospital, just every aspect that supports the community, they use that to come in. But listen, they're putting profits before people and it causes us such pain. What I'm saying here to everybody who's listening, I'm telling you, if you are a Republican or you're a Democrat, I don't care. We have a crisis right now. It's not about that. People are suffering. If you are an American, I was an officer in the United States Air Force. And so I took an oath to fight for this country, and I'm still going to do that. And so what I'm saying to you is that we have a climate crisis. People are hurting. Literally, earlier here in Texas, children froze to death. We have folks losing their homes in California. We have folks on the road and they're running for their lives. We are in a climate emergency. This has got to stop. So we need to get on the job and make this madness stop. And we can do it. We have the things that to do it before it's too late. But we messing around with this fossil fuel industry, taking their money, which is blood money, which is killing our communities. And that has got to stop. We're going to have worse storms. We couldn't even evacuate this storm from a dust up storm, in essence, to a Category 4 in 72 hours.
We have to leave it there, Reverend Lennox Yearwood. We want to thank you so much for being with us, president of the Hip Hop Caucus. And that does it for our show. Happy birthday to Hani Masood. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe, wear a mask.
I first got the vaccine, number one, as obviously to protect myself, but honestly to protect my family. I've had direct discussions after getting the vaccine with members of my own family. And I think in general, there was just kind of overall skepticism, especially in the Black community, but in Black and Brown communities alike. There are historic health inequities. And so there are reasonable concerns from members of those communities. And that's a community that I belong to as well. And that's why I had to inform myself and look at the data myself. The data was very reassuring. And one thing for me as a Black American was seeing how diverse the patient population was in each trial and feeling comfortable with that as well. There is lots of misinformation in the media and it's hard to combat that. And so I would go with trusted sources, medical professionals, people in your community, people in your family, ask about their experiences and get familiar.
And keep it tuned to WUSB Stony Brook at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday, time for Off the Wall.
an incredible start to this screenplay match. Romero Marquez is going to take. Looks like Callahan Young to defend. And it's an early goal. Brazil lead before the first half has even started. And it's 1-0 to Brazil, taking advantage of that early penalty. It was Zach Buehler. He just couldn't keep it out.
Tonight's contest is Guess the Sport.
And you wonder if USA will be left to rue that early infringement. Lehman Moreno to start. Blocked by Callahan Young. Steadies himself on the post. It's a rotation throw, but didn't quite have his bearings and the ball. Jose Marcio Souza's post. Souza. Just cross court, rotation throw. Hit by Matt Simpson. Simpson moves across court, rotation throw. Hit by Souza. You are allowed to move within your own area and often see teams use it as a way of catching their opponents unawares. Moreno with the throw blocked by Simpson. Tyler Merritt in the centre. By the Brazil centre, Marquez. Marquez rotation throw. Blocked by Merritt. It's Callahan Young. Goes for the smoother ball, but very fast, smooth ball. It's blocked out. Brazil have possession. Souza. Got by Young. Rapid response from Young. Here's Marquez. Here's Walker. Blocked by DeMeo. Here's Moreno.
Okay, Kyle, I literally have no clue what sport this is. Let me turn this this jubilant announcer down just a little bit.
I think this is right after the Olin goal.
The annoying squeak game, whatever that is.
Oh, yeah, definitely apologies to any animals that might be annoyed by high-pitched noises.
It's like chalk on a blackboard.
It's a chirp.
It's a very big chirp, yes, but wow, I mean,
but that's the noise. Listen.
Get so much force to that through the leg shot.
Listen.
Do we count the number of chirps? Is that how they scored?
On the shoulder area, but it's a very effective tactic in goal ball.
If you want that sleigh bell, you hear that? That's the ball.
A sleigh bell is the ball.
No. No. Let me explain.
It sounded like that's what
the ball has bells embedded in it.
The ball has bells in it.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a bell ball.
And they serve it, so a side person, authentic, you know, ref or somebody on the side drops it in front of the player, and then they serve it.
Do you realize we're calling the calling of a game over a theme?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's never happened before.
Why just let we talk about it real quick?
No, it's
interesting.
It's amazing. So a sleigh ball, is that what the sport is called? Or
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What we're listening to is a game called Goal Ball.
Say what now?
This is Goal Ball.
Goal Ball.
Goal Ball.
I can't even say that. Goal Ball?
We're going to have to get it out
goal
of your system.
Goal Ball. It's hard to say that. I don't know why. Probably because of the L that you got to recover from and pronounce a B.
Yeah.
Goal Ball. I can do that. But there's going to be a space between goal and ball.
Yeah. And it primarily relies on ear-hand coordination.
Oh, this is from the Paralympics.
It is.
All right.
Yeah, I got drawn into this because it's been hard to follow a little bit. You know, it's not getting as much mainstream attention, but social media, there's been some cool stories, and I've been trying to follow details of the events. And this caught my eye. I don't mean that in like a sarcastic way. Or I'm not trying to be funny.
Wait, are they blind?
This is governed by the International Blind Sports Federation. Wow. Yeah.
Can we listen to the last 2 minutes?
Definitely.
Without us talking over it. Because I kind of want to hear how this ends.
This is the U.S. versus Brazil.
U.S. versus Brazil in goal ball.
Men's goal ball, yeah.
Men's goal ball.
Three players each side.
All right. Let's listen.
De Silva. Blocks. By Chris Coop. Chris Coop with the rotation throw. It's just wide of Alex De Meo. It's Moreno. Blocked by Chris Coop. USA calling a timeout. 10-second shot clock, 8-second game clock. They will just run down these last 8 seconds. Oh no, they throw. But will Brazil have time to get the ball back into play? They do, and they score, but it's... And it's just on the hooter, not yet sure if it's counted. In one sense, it doesn't matter.
Go USA!
Well, it's been called as a long ball, so that goal won't count.
How is that a long ball?
I'm not... I don't know.
The penalty, I think, has been awarded on that Brazil throw, so that goal won't count. Well, that's it. What a dramatic game this has been. USA against Brazil. And it's been one of those phenomenal games of goal ball I've ever seen. It's had an own goal. It's had a goal on the hooter. It's had a penalty before the start of the first half. And at the end of this enthralling game, it's USA who emerges the victors.
Wow. They were going nuts over there.
What do you think?
Well, yeah, I almost said something offensive when they called the long ball. I said, that ref's got to be blind. And I realized all the players are blind.
You got to get the jokes out.
No, it wasn't the joke. That was what I wanted to say, because that's what you say at a ball
game. You do. And yeah. Honestly, you should, because this is just as exciting and interesting and entertaining as any other game. And what you realize, and my point, I think, in bringing this up sharing.
I'm exhausted.
My point is, you realize with this game, and it's talked about in some of the information about it, there's no sighted equivalent. And let me explain that.
Yeah,
all
that
of the players have blindfolds. So if they're partially sighted, or if there's even a player that isn't necessarily blind, they could play. But you're playing on the terms of people who have this ear-hand ability. I'm not going to say disability, because you really, once you realize that there's no equivalent, like this is only a skill, and it's based on rehabilitation exercises.
It's actually something we couldn't do.
From soldiers who lost their sight, early in World War II, it emerged as a form of rehabilitation. It really leans on that sense of ear-hand coordination that sighted people just don't have, and this game was created...
I don't even know what that is, ear-hand coordination.
It means the ability, kind of like echolocation, but to be spatially aware based on your hearing, to be able to coordinate catching a ball that's coming at you that has this sound in the ball.
Oh, and that's what the bells are for. I got it.
Exactly.
Wow.
And so that isn't in the game... It might, in the real, you know, wider world, we might consider that a disability, but in the game, it's like a superpower.
In that game,
It is the crucial thing that allows you to basically anticipate where you need to be, how to block, and each team, there's three players on each side. The net is very wide. It's typically like on a volleyball type court, but there's like field hockey type goals, but they're very wide. They're like the length of each side. And you have two defenders in front and then like a goal person. and they're seated. So they're on the ground, and you never kick the ball. It's all hand-based, and you're required to play accordingly. And then you wear eye shades. And that's what allows other players who may have partial sight, et cetera, to also play. But everyone wears these shades. So when you're watching this, you're seeing these people seated on a court with eye shades being served a ball with bells in it and basically trying to launch the ball into the other's net. And wow. You see people defending their goal with just solely relying on their ability to hear it.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
And I found it really entertaining, and I read a little bit more about it, and it's 12-minute halves. They used to be 10-minute, and it's based on throwing and rolling the ball from one end of the playing area to another.
Now, I'd like to know why the Paralympics don't get as much attention. It's not on prime time like the Olympics were, and it's as exciting. I mean, the way you just described that, and I didn't get to see it. I just heard it, but it sounded really thrilling. It should be on, what channel do we even find it on? NBC Sports Network, I think, is what it is. Good luck finding that. That's someplace crazy on the dial.
It is the same carriers, and of course it's also in Tokyo, so there's the time delay with the North American markets and, right. And prime time and all that. So you can catch it if you're recording it. I encourage people, if they're interested. There are events and things that you don't even know exist, mm-hmm. And it is really cool to just see the camaraderie and the players. And how on some of the team events their differences can kind of be combined, and how there are different ratings for different athletes' ability levels even as they play in the same event. And I watched some of the swimming, which is really fascinating for like non-sighted people, and many of the other stuff. There's so many interesting things. Just try it out. I was kind of like not hearing a lot about it and not seeing very much, and I just wanted to like give it a little bit of time and get interested in something. And I did see some coverage of it, and that got me, piqued my interest.
I know it's on CBC in Canada. I know over the air. I'm not sure if it's over the air anywhere in the States. I might be wrong about that. I haven't really checked the guide, but I did notice that it's being played frequently, a lot of live coverage or pre-recorded coverage. And that's how it should be, because these are athletes. It's you know, amazing competition and so educational, too. The only thing, goal ball, they couldn't come up with a better name than that. I mean, every game has a goal, pretty much. You know, football, soccer, hockey, they all have a goal. So how come this one gets to be called goal ball? It just seems like they could have come up with a better name, you know?
I never heard of it before this show. I know what you're talking about. It's actually a good point. I was laughing and kind of, having a little fun with the idea of the name. It drew me in a little bit. I definitely was more curious because the name did seem a little bit funny. But it's unique, so they had to come up with something unique. Maybe they should... maybe they'll have, like, a name contest or something. But it's established, it's played, and it's worth checking out. And great coverage, good calling of that game. We obviously had to cut some sections out, and
we could have played the whole game, I guess. You know?
Right. Well, the coverage does have commercials and so on. We can't do that. We're a community radio station right here, but really thankful for the coverage that's out there and giving that important game, you know, giving it a platform, a place to be seen in what otherwise, you know, people might not catch elsewhere. So.
Well, if you've watched the Paralympics, let us know what sport you like. Any highlights for you, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear your feedback on that. Other news, there was a bit of a hurricane down in New Orleans over the weekend. And boy, that was right now it's got to be hell down there, because Catastrophic power failure. The entire city of New Orleans is out of power. Not too surprising. I mean, you know, that's the kind of thing that happens. And now, with tremendous heat, we're talking about temperatures 103 degrees with humidity, and no air conditioning, and no power for this foreseeable future. It's got to be a really bad place to be right now.
Yeah, from the reports and as much of the coverage as I've gleaned, it's impossible. It's very difficult yet to assess where the damage is and how to go about recovering or reestablishing connectivity. People don't have water. There are requests for ice and other kind of temporary supplies.
Mm-hmm.
I know MREs, which are really not the most delightful cuisine in the world, but the stuff like that,
especially
is,
especially if you're from New Orleans.
Yeah, there's so much better food down there, and that is a tragedy in and of itself. But I know that there was a really strong effort to get more images and whatever kind of vantage of the damage. And
but the people really,
telecommunications,
they really held together. The levees held too, which is, you know, tremendous.
Some of that, yeah,
for the most part,
structural and large projects that were failing during that crisis were not as much of a factor this time. Thankfully, those mistakes were corrected years ago.
Well, I remember doing this show after Katrina. I was in Japan 16 years ago, and basically seeing TV reports, newspapers, and it just looked like the city had been completely destroyed, and there was no infrastructure whatsoever. Death toll was very high. While this was a stronger storm, it seems to have not dealt as bad a hand to the people down there.
Well, we don't know yet.
We don't know yet. You're
right. Don't have numbers. There's no way to even figure out. How you can't assess the damage to go in with people to assess that kind of information. So it could be very, very bad. It
could be. Yeah, you're right. But I don't think we've seen flooding, but I don't think we've seen the kind of catastrophic flooding that Katrina brought.
No. Yeah, absolutely. And that's partly because of these levees and large buffers built in response to that. And I think that everybody, I mean, there was a lot of notification and advance notice, preparation. People are really trying. I think they did the best they could. But there's still there's just so much devastation that we just don't know about yet.
Yeah.
So we're going to follow it and report back.
And add COVID on top of that, and it's a real catastrophe, especially with the way things have been going in Louisiana with a relatively low vaccination rate. Not a place I would want to be right now.
This is a part of the world that we're going to have to follow is hurting badly mm-hmm. right now. Yeah,
we've been watching the coverage on a TV station down there called WWL. You can go to YouTube, just type WWL coverage and watch live. It's incredible. The importance of a local media outlet. I think they have a radio station too doing the same thing. And for the people that are able to see television or hear radio, I imagine a lot more people are able to hear the radio right now. Times like this, that's when the urgency becomes so obvious. And, you know, those stations that pipe signals in from afar, you see how worthless they are, how completely meaningless. But I'm also seeing the same thing insofar as telecommunications, because I was watching WWL a couple of days ago in the midst of the storm, and they were saying how we need to be able to talk to this particular official. However, the cell phone towers are out, and there's no way to talk to an official because they only had a cell phone, and the cell phone towers were out. And if the cell phone towers weren't out, the power was out, and then people would lose power to their cell phones, and they wouldn't be able to talk anyway. Right now, I believe cell phone towers are back online, but how many people have working cell phones because of the power outage? And how long will that last? Landlines. I remember Hurricane Gloria, Hurricane Bob, Hurricane Sandy, so many storms where the power was out for weeks at a time up here, weeks at a time, but the landline always worked. You could always pick up the phone. I'm seeing stories about people trying to reach their elderly relatives who no doubt were convinced to disconnect their landline either by their younger relatives or by the phone companies. And it's a crime. You can't reach them now. You don't know how they are. They can't call out. If you had a landline there, you would have no problem. Yeah, they go out sometimes, but not compared to electricity.
They're not. Oh, I thought you were talking about the older folks. They're not as mobile. And for them to just have a mobile phone, it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's convenient. Yeah, have a mobile phone, but don't disconnect your landline. Have that for emergencies. And, you know, if you're not going to have a landline in your house, there should at least be a payphone somewhere that you can get to, that you can make a call to relatives or just keep in touch. You know, I can count on one hand, I think, the number of people I know who still have landlines in their homes. And it's short-sighted. It's short-sighted to reject new technology. It's short-sighted to abandon old technology. We have to have the both of them working to strengthen each other. In this particular case, social media was a real boon because people were able to track down other people if they had power, if they were able to communicate in that method. So that was a good thing to have. But not being able to make a simple phone call, either in an emergency or to reach somebody to see how they were, that was a big mistake, I think, to encourage that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's the takeaway from this for people who, at the end of the day, are really reliant on one another. They're reliant on the immediate community, folks around them that are also going through those circumstances. And you're even hearing it in the leadership describing how heavily, like, FEMA is encouraging people to lean on their neighbors and to help their neighbors, you know, all the way around, mm-hmm. because that's how they get to more people faster when not everyone is expecting everything from the federal aid. And there are many, many groups that are helping and doing as much as they can in conjunction with the federal government. But it's really crucial when people, first responders are cut off, officials are cut off, they don't have information, they don't know where to allocate resources. That's when you need that connection. You got to be able to get a hold of your neighbor and check on somebody or coordinate. If you had that vital payphone, maybe you could coordinate deliveries for a neighborhood or something. Those ideas and things that come out of crises like this are something that would be very keen to use that kind of equipment. So we shouldn't discard it out of hand, or at least, well, anyway, I could go on and on about it, but it's something we should maintain in conjunction to introducing new things, because it can come in handy.
Yeah, you know, I find every bit of technology that people say is out of date, no longer in use, no longer cool, I find that there's always a use for it somewhere. You know, whether it's a radio, whether it's a landline, whether it's a book, you know, all sorts of things that people say, oh, yeah, that's no longer part of the culture. You're wrong. It is. It will be. And that's not to dismiss new technologies, new ways of doing things, but to discard the old ways and assume that they're out of date. Very, very bad idea. And we're seeing it now. And Ida is on its way here, on her way here. She'll be here tomorrow. It won't be a hurricane, won't even be a tropical storm, I don't think. It'll just be a lot of rain, maybe a little bit of wind. And, we had some rain last week, quite a lot of it, actually. We're going to get some more this week. That ought to finish off the sunflowers, I think. Yeah, we tried sunflowers this year. Sunchokes are doing good, by the way, because we kept the bastard out of the garden, the groundhog.
Non-lethal, too.
And his kid, the two of them have been eyeing them, but it's behind a fence now, so they can't get to it. But we also tried some sunflowers. They came up. It looked so good for a while, you know, so optimistic. But then in kind of a shady place, so they got a little spindly. And some of them bloomed, but the flowers weren't that big. They were kind of tiny flowers, tiny sunflower, but that's still good. The bees liked it. But then whenever rain came, they kind of drooped. And then when the last rain last week came, a few of them snapped. You can't recover from that. It just snapped right in half. The sunchokes are fine. I don't know. They seem to be stronger as far as stems. Sunflowers, not so much. You know what? Plenty of people growing sunflowers. We don't need to do that. We saw a sunflower tree.
It was like a monster sunflower.
Oh, my God. We went to a local establishment, and they just had a sunflower that was a sunflower plant that was like five times the size of a normal one.
Yeah, the stem was like as thick as my forearm. It was huge. It was just like something I don't even know out of I don't know, like a horror movie, like a where the well not a horror movie, but like some science experiment thing where it's
gotten out of control.
It's just completely. Mm. I don't know what that thing was eating.
But it hasn't even bloomed yet. That's the thing. When it blooms, every bee in the county is going to come for that.
Unbelievable, but. We learn, you know, that we won't be novice at that when we go for it again. Maybe it was.
Why would we go for it again? What? How much heartache can you take?
You're right. They're literally sunflowers. If they don't have enough, they're pretty much not.
The clue is right there in the name. You know? They're not shade flowers. We should plant shade flowers. That's what we should do.
Well, there's plenty of native species. Yeah, we can
marigolds.
Do this.
Marigolds grow, you know, like half a foot.
Oh, they have so tiny little seeds. They're so hard to start. It's crazy.
That is true. That is true. Ugh. You know what I like about sunflowers, though? Bees seem to live in the sunflowers. If you look at a sunflower, there's always a bee inside the sunflower. Now, do they go home at night? I don't really check it out in the evening time, but I don't know. Is that just, they're just camping out there? It's awfully weird. Go check one out, but be careful because the bees are very short-tempered.
And territorial.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. What else? We have a storm coming, so that's going to be fun as always. Want to talk about some COVID stuff? There's some COVID stuff going on.
some light, nothing heavy, right?
No, nothing too heavy. You know, the usual comical Florida developments. Get this. The Florida Department of Education made good on a threat to withhold funding from local school districts that defied Governor Ron DeSantis's ban on preventing COVID-19, which is basically what he's doing, his ban on mask mandates. Now, a state judge has ruled that the governor's ban was unconstitutional. Yeah. So how is it possible for them to be withholding funds from these counties for violating the order that has been ruled unconstitutional? This is how Republicans work. You know, they lost in court. They're doing something unconstitutional. And those places, those people that don't obey their unconstitutional decrees are punished. It's sick. It really is sick. We're going to fight to protect parents' rights to make healthcare decisions for their children. They know what's best for their children, said Richard Corcoran, local moron that is not really defined any further. But no, they don't. And the same thing applies to people around here because we're seeing these school board meetings breaking out into all kinds of yelling matches and emotional outbursts. You don't know what's best for your kids if you say it's okay for them to run around without masks right now. You need to check the facts. You need to listen to what's going on right now. There is a very deadly variant, you might have heard of it, called Delta, that is far more contagious and even more deadly than the previous version. It's kind of like a Windows upgrade. You know, you think you're getting something better, but actually it's a whole lot worse. And sometimes you can't avoid it. That's what's happening right now. Now, you may like for your precious child not to have to wear a mask in school, but I got to tell you something. The kids don't feel the same way. We see kids all the time running around. In fact, we were just in town, you know, a small town near us. And the only people wearing masks were the kids. And they were obviously willingly wearing the mask. They were happy. And I think they're more alert as to what's going on, as to the dangers. It doesn't affect them in a bad way. What affects them in a bad way is you screaming and getting hysterical about it and making this a contentious issue. This is a challenge. We're all going through it. Do you think there are people around that are sitting in some smoky room someplace. Okay, maybe they don't smoke, but they're sitting in a room someplace. And they're saying, yeah, okay, the plan is moving ahead just as we anticipated. We're getting people to cover their faces. And that means that in the next year, people won't have faces to look at anymore. I'm trying to remember what the motivation was, because they're anti-lipstick. They don't want people to... What did they get out of it?
I keep thinking that it's like they're anti-potty training or something. You know, you imagine like it's like we're against the bathroom, even though teachers and everybody's convinced that, you know, young people need to learn how to use the bathroom. But certain parents are against bathrooms entirely.
That's a whole other controversy. I don't think we should bring that up.
Yeah, that doesn't really compare, but it's...
Because there are parents that don't believe in that, but...
But it's like our belief is against, health guidance that you have to teach, and kids will go along with certain training,
according
right?
to people, we're part of the conspiracy, so... And we were briefed on this. Why do we need everybody to be wearing masks? Everybody to be wearing masks 24/7 in the next year. It's to defeat the facial recognition. That's a conspiracy thing. So they would be.
No, that's how it helps.
They would be for that.
Yeah.
There was something. Breathing apparatus. It makes it harder to breathe. No, that wasn't it. There's a reason. It doesn't matter. There is a conspiracy. There's a plot to have everybody wearing masks.
They don't want people to know how to read lips.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. There's a
lot of it going, yeah.
You get cursive, and you get spelling.
Wait, doesn't that protect your privacy, though?
Math, but no lip reading.
Hang on a second. If you wear a mask, and you're convinced the government is following you, and is evil, then wearing a mask would prevent them from reading your lips. So that would be something they would be for. No, that's not it either. You know what? I'm sorry, folks. We're not prepared. We'll remember what it was, and we'll tell you as soon as we figure it out. But yeah, there is a big conspiracy to have everybody wear masks. This whole COVID thing, it's a myth. It's
no,
something.
No, no, no. All right,
it's,
right.
No,
stop,
it's,
stop.
It's
you're
just
lying.
Made up, made up.
Lies,
and,
lies. All right, stop. Yeah. This isn't helpful. Did you hear about the January 6th attorney who disappeared?
January 6th is also a myth.
John Pierce, the lawyer for 17 people accused of the insurrection, has gone missing.
I heard he had COVID.
Yeah, he's on a ventilator.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Then he's not missing, is he? Or did he steal the ventilator?
The alleged vaccine skeptic is hospitalized with COVID.
You know, and we're seeing this over and over and over again. The skeptics who are getting sick or dying. It's too depressing to even focus on right now. But follow the facts, follow the science, pay attention. And don't listen to nonsense, because there's plenty of it out there. It's really easy to get sucked into that world. I'm just, I'm seriously trying to understand the logic, and I can't do it. I can't understand why anybody would think wearing a mask is a bad thing if there's a proven contagion out there that you could prevent. It obviously, before we had the vaccine, wearing masks is what kept the death toll and the infection rate from spiraling out of control here in New York. So the same thing holds true now that we are... admittedly, in a somewhat better place because of the vaccine, but not nearly good enough because not enough people took the vaccine. It's ridiculous, this situation that we're in right now.
Certainly. I don't know how much more we can talk about. There's so many stories about this. That's why I kind of didn't want to go. I wanted to keep it light, but your story was, I don't know, I had a good story there. It's just...
I never finished
never
story.
Ending. Yeah, I'm sorry I interrupted you with
no,
the...
No, I interrupted myself.
I was just so...
This idiot down in Florida saying the parents know what's best for their children. No, they don't. If they're making bad decisions for their kids, they most certainly do not know what is best for them. And their kids will get... When we start seeing kids, and we are starting to see this now, kids in hospitals, kids dying from this disease... You know, is that going to wake people up? You get to a certain point where nothing gets through to you, and it's really a scary scenario to be considering right now. But what I can't understand is how Florida gets away with this. You know, here in New York, you know, there's a discretion, we deal with it, you know, and we've got a new governor now, and things are running smoothly. But in other states, states like Texas and Florida, the governor literally is responsible for killing people. Literally responsible for that. And you know, actively, right now. And nothing is done. And they get away with it. And they impose penalties on people who are obeying the law. And they get away with doing horrible things.
And then they're defiant. They go get treatment. Continue to lie. Continue to lie about the vaccine. And then remain defiant while mm-hmm. they kill more people with their lies.
Yeah.
And they get the remdesivir. They get whatever $1,000 treatment, all the best testing. And they get to live through the lie. And they get all the support and money in the world to mm-hmm. live through it while everyone under their watch dies.
Yeah. I think it should be a crime. I don't say this often, but I do think it should be a crime to be encouraging people not to get the vaccine when you have gotten vaccinated yourself. I think if it's found that you protected yourself, but you're preaching to other people that they shouldn't get it, you are basically aiding and abetting in their demise. At you know, or at the very least, them being put at risk, great risk. if you're idiotic enough to not get the vaccine yourself, then I think you're in need of some kind of help, and really shouldn't be in a position to be influencing people because you obviously haven't done the research and you don't know what you're talking about. You know, it's getting worse. We need to act more strongly than we have been. We've been a bit too tolerant, and this kind of nonsense cannot stand. Locally, nationally, internationally, wherever. I'm really sick of this. You know, there we joke about people in rooms planning and plotting, but that's what they think is going on. They think that there's some kind of global conspiracy to insult Trump. That's what we're at right now. By inventing a disease and having all these people have to take precautions. That's one hell of a conspiracy. That's like nothing ever even anticipated. Please, get real. Common sense.
Yeah, even if it was some weapon or whatever crazy thing you believe, wouldn't this be a time to do everything you can as a united nation to combat that? There's just so many holes and
the United Nation, Kyle, is too similar to United Nations.
Hypocritical.
It's too similar to United Nations, and the United Nations are evil. Remember, or is evil? It's an evil entity. I'm speaking through their voice right now, and that is the kind of logic that used to be 100% laughable in the past, but now has actually gained a foothold. Look, go on Twitter. I hate to say this to people, but go on Twitter, read the tweets of people like Donald Trump Jr., our own Representative Lee Zeldin, and you see how science no longer means anything. How basically you can come up with the most bizarre scenarios, and there will be people that will follow you. Yeah, I remember there was a program many years ago called All in the Family. I'm sure everyone's heard of it. There was one episode where Archie Bunker, the racist yet lovable person, and I still think it's a good show on that level, and you can learn a lot about people. He was saying that the best way to stop hijackings would be to hand out guns to people as they got onto the airplane. That way, if anybody tried to take over the plane, everybody else would have a gun. It was the funniest possible scenario that anybody could suggest. It was bizarre and ridiculous and insane. Today, there are people that believe that. Today, there are politicians that will say something like that. If not that specifically, something damn close. That is how we are devolving. That is how we are turning into this absurdity, because we've opened up the floodgates to every possible theory, every possible way of dealing with a situation, no matter how much harm it causes.
Right. It's this, I think, we suffer from an abundance of ideas and information all competing for believers. And I think that it's sadly taking a really huge toll on many people's lives, many innocent people's lives
yeah.
in this country. And people have been warned. We've been warning. We've been trying our best to beg people to pay attention, to find out for themselves, to verify the things we report, verify the things they're hearing from state officials with whomever they trust for those kinds of decisions. And it has become the health side and what we're living through has become just one part of a giant poisonous atmosphere that doesn't really see any human cost in throwing those kinds of attitudes around.
Here is my rule, and then we'll escape to a better place. The rule that I would live by and the rule that I think others should live by: if you're a doctor, and if you don't have a doctor, get a doctor, see a doctor, get a checkup. If your doctor says to you, you, person, your name, you should not get the vaccine. It's a bad idea for you to get the vaccine. If they say that to you, don't get the vaccine. There is no other situation I can think of where you shouldn't get the vaccine. That is the only one. If your doctor says to you, without you hounding them or trying to get them to say that, if they say to you, do not get the vaccine, it will be bad for you, then listen to your doctor and don't get the vaccine. That is the only scenario you should not get the vaccine. Every other one, you should have already gotten it. And if you haven't already gotten it, get it now. Or make that doctor's appointment and then see what they say, and then get it when they don't tell you not to.
And if that's your situation, you do not have permission to go espousing whatever you think is true about your situation as though it might apply to everyone else.
Well, you don't need permission to be an idiot, unfortunately. It's in the Constitution. All right, let's get out of here. You know, if it weren't for movies, I think we'd go mad, completely crazy.
Yes.
This is our sustaining feature, Films of the Year That Was. We are up to the year 2004. This is where we see an Academy Award-winning film for each year, beginning when they started handing them out in the 1920s. And 2004, yeah. Which one do you want to start with, domestic or international? I say let's start with domestic.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because that was the first one we saw, and we kind of got the second one. Well, whichever you feel better doing.
I'm going to get it out right now. I mean, they both cover...
It was weird.
They both cover euthanasia.
Yeah, they both wound up with the same basic scenario. And, of course, we're ruining them for people that haven't seen them. So
this is not a segue where, you know, we're trying to be cheery about life by ending it. That is not the point.
I tried to get away from the depressing things by stepping into a movie theater.
I thought
that didn't work.
Light, E. What the heck?
Well, I didn't make the decision, okay? The Academy was in a dark mood that year.
So you want to hear Maggie.
Two films about quadriplegics and euthanasia.
Margaret. You want to know about Margaret Fitzgerald in Million Dollar Bebe?
Yeah. Thanks, Catherine O'Hara. That was a Clint Eastwood film. I rolled my eyes deep into my head when I saw this was the film we were going to be seeing. I wasn't in the mood for another boxing film. I'm still recovering from Rocky. Female boxing, interesting, but it didn't really pull me in. And then having Morgan Freeman, Clint Eastwood starring, I know they work well together, and they can be entertaining. And Hilary Swank, definitely of interest, you know, as far as an actress. Overall, yeah, interesting story about up-and-coming female boxer who is taken in by the, you know, grumpy Clint Eastwood manager. And he trains her until, well, do you want to continue with the story? Or?
Yeah, I think you mean Scrap Iron, who is
That's Morgan Freeman. Right.
Yeah, and Frankie. Basically, she works her way up. Because Frankie kind of gives her tips, even though... Scrap Iron gives Maggie tips, even though Frankie kind of refuses to train her. Eventually, they do some short fights, some small matches, and she works her way up in the amateur division with Clint Eastwood's character finally helping her. And then, you know, her big dream is to do this title fight, and against. He puts it off. He really delays her doing this, kind of saying, you know, you're not ready. And
well, that's his thing. He always protects his fighters and doesn't give them the championship. And then they move on to a different manager that will move faster. But he's really looking out for them. But he's also cautious because he has a history with Morgan Freeman. And that's why Morgan Freeman lost his eye because of some fight that he was supposedly responsible for.
Correct. She's looking at him as this big, great trainer, and he's looking at all the caution and trauma he's caused or, you know, didn't defend in a fighter. So there's a cost to him taking her on. And that culminates in this title fight where against his better judgment, she's fighting this this hardened, dirty fighter, the German ex-prostitute.
East German, I believe.
I'm sorry, East German. The Blue Bear punches her with an illegal sucker punch after the bell, and Maggie lands on the seat of a stool that, you know, you'd have in a corner, and it breaks her neck. So the reason it was there is Clint Eastwood had placed it there because the bell rang. She's going to come sit down, get the cuts looked at, all that. Well, she gets knocked, and the stool's still, like, halfway there. He's trying to move it out of the way. She hits it. She becomes a ventilator-dependent quadriplegic.
Okay, first of all, I have a problem with this. Why wasn't that boxer who did that after the bell charged with a crime? If she was, we didn't hear about it. But that's, you know, that's assault. That's after the bell. And you basically cost her career, her life, everything.
It's, yeah, it was. There's I have a couple problems with this, too. Also, this is, and I guess before I get beyond that with a plot, I think this is like early 2000s fascination. Speaking of like the Paralympics and ability in mm-hmm. its representations on film, this is a able-bodied actor playing someone who becomes paralyzed. We're in a much different era now, and I think that, you know, we now have actors who have varying levels of ability that are given roles that aren't necessarily about them becoming this way, or it isn't like the Stephen Hawking story or something about a famous paraplegic, which kind of it isn't as authentic. I mean, it's sort of a curiosity, and I think that this is foreshadowing for that becoming better in film as far as hiring actors across the board. And
well, you couldn't have hired a quadriplegic because there's a whole part of the film where she's not a quadriplegic, so you'd have to somehow...
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, but this is like an early attempt. I guess I'm clumsily saying it's like it's starting to change a little bit, but it seems still like a spectacle, like a fascination of, oh my gosh.
Well, I didn't see it coming. In fact,
horrific.
A lot of people, they kept this from the audience. They thought it was just a female boxing film because there were so many of those, and they walked into the theater. And then they got this emotional tsunami in the end.
That was me, because you know what? Of all the things I remembered about this film, I did not remember that part.
How did you not remember that part?
Part of it, wow. I don't know. I didn't see it at the time. I knew it was an important film. And I think the other thing is her fighting and how much Hilary Swank took on in doing that. I watched some of the special features about what her training was like for it. And that is... not to be overlooked. Really outstanding performance and dedication to a role.
It was, you know, and it was fascinating seeing her go from boxer to quadriplegic and see her begging Clint Eastwood to help end her life. You know, I had a bit of a problem with that, but I imagine a lot of people did because, you know, he was trying to get her to do things like enroll in college and just, you know, basically look forward to things, and she didn't see it that way. And, you know, many people live this life and they live fulfilling lives. We're just talking about the Paralympics. There are all kinds of possibilities. Maybe they didn't see it as much then, or maybe this person just didn't see it personally. And that's a thing. That certainly is. I think they're right. But I think the prevailing sentiment at the time was, wow, you're in that position. There's really nothing for you. And I think that's changed. I think that's what you were saying before. That's kind of evolved a bit. And people see someone who's quadriplegic and they don't see someone who's helpless anymore.
Certainly not. And I know that's not, I don't want to generalize either way around, but it's worth seeing as, you know, of all the films emerging at the time, that this is a new type of protagonist or a new type of story that mm-hmm. isn't something we'd seen in, of course, Winners or in many of the films that led up to it. And I would just argue that there's a lot more emphasis put on. Maybe it's artificial. Maybe, you know, who, judge for that however you may. I mean, that may be a subjective thing, but it's certainly changed in the kinds of stories we're telling around ability and or lack thereof. And the types of roles actors of varying ability get. And it's contentious or it becomes culture war stuff. It shouldn't. It isn't. It's just change. And I think that's kind of interesting in how this subject matter, good and bad, is portrayed.
A couple of things with the dialogue. There was one point in the film where Clint Eastwood and Morgan Freeman are having a back and forth. And they're priceless when they're together. But this particular part stood out to me, where basically Morgan Freeman has his feet on a bed or something, and his socks have holes in them. And Clint Eastwood is saying, your socks have holes in them. And Morgan Freeman says, yeah, these are my sleeping socks. I like to have air in my feet when I sleep. And Clint Eastwood said, well, why are you wearing them now then? He said, well, my daytime socks have too many holes in them. You know, and that was kind of back and forth, which was, you know, nice, but it was very rare. It's almost like somebody else wrote that particular section of the film. That kind of chemistry is what I think this film could have used more of. There wasn't really enough of that. There's a lot of gruffness, grouchiness, that kind of thing.
Stilted moments.
Yeah. I just think they could have expanded on that relationship a little bit. The other thing, the family of Hilary Swank, from the Ozarks, they were kind of stereotypical redneck, didn't care for anybody but themselves. A family that just wanted her money and didn't respect her at all. Even when she bought her mother a house, it was basically, oh my God, they're going to expose the welfare fraud that we're involved. It just seemed too stereotypical. I love Margot Martindale. She played the mother. She was also in The Americans. She's a fantastic actress. I didn't know she was from the Midwest.
That was her early stuff. And
yeah, she's great.
Outstanding to see her in that, after having seen her role as the sort of agent in The Americans.
They could have done more with her character. They could have made her more multidimensional, but that's just, you know, me rewriting the whole film. Okay, international film. So we got through that, and then what happens? We wind up seeing an international film about a quadriplegic who wants to end his life. My God, are they the same people that select the films for international and domestic best film?
I'm not sure. It was in the air that year.
Sure was.
This is the 2004 drama by Alejandro Amenábar.
And it was called what?
The Sea Inside.
The Sea Inside.
And yes, it is a guy named Ramon San Pedro who is quadriplegic after a driving accident and has...
Diving accident.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
I mean, I'm diving. Right. You saw the film. He wasn't driving. He dove.
Yeah. How many times they flash back to him underwater?
Oh, my God.
Underwater.
I didn't need to see him diving into
shallow water,
oh,
breaking his neck like at least six times in the film.
No, it was twice. But still, it was more than enough.
All right. I am reading.
So
sorry.
This guy, it's based on a true story. His whole life, basically, he was trying to fight for the right to kill himself.
28 years.
I think it was a better done film because it really got into the thought process behind this. And the characters were a lot more interesting, but boy, it was dark.
Certainly was. The cheeriness, there's sort of contrasting things where he's resolute in he's determined in his choice and pursuing it, and is met with this cheery character, in a local woman, Rosa, who wants to convince him that everything is, you know, it's worth living, and he shouldn't feel so bad. And then a lawyer who is sympathetic and suffers from Katazil syndrome and supports him.
Yeah, that was something.
The two of them is sort of this juxtaposition as he's toiling. And, of course, paralyzed individuals, namely a priest, come to try to talk to him and tell him how much value they find in their life.
It's funny, there was a priest in both films.
That's right.
They were both kind of interesting characters.
It's true. And the priest, of course, is trying to get up the stairs, and then apparently they can't fit him around the corner, so he's just downstairs. And so then Alejandro yells down the stairs.
Well, first they have a young priest go running up and down the stairs conveying messages.
Back and forth.
And then they're like, hey, can you hear me? Yeah, so they just have a debate across a couple of floors.
Well, right,
of
but
house.
That was after they got stuck on the stairs with a wheelchair. Anyway, there was a lot more levity and quirkiness in the main character.
We are out of time. Turn the projector off. It's so hot in here. And guess what? Next week we are preempted by sports. Apparently, a goalball game. No, it's not volleyball. We're being preempted by volleyball. We've never been preempted by volleyball before, so that's going to be interesting. And I'm going to be listening because I'd like to hear what volleyball sounds like on the radio.
It's standing volleyball.
Well, yeah, I imagine so.
There's seated volleyball, you know.
There's beach volleyball. Yeah. There's space volleyball. There's all kinds of games you can play in space. You don't watch the Space Station channel, do you?
I forgot to prepare for this part of the show.
Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Good night.
So long.
When Johnny come again, home again, hurrah, tra-la. He's coming by bus or underground, hurrah, tra-la. A woman that will shed a tear to see his face so beatenly fair. He's just around the corner and he's wasting the war. Still has to make jump clubs and fit, hurrah, tra-la. We'll
Ah, my friends, welcome to Finn's Revolution on WUSB Stony Brook until the 9 p.m. hour. Two words, first of all, to lead you off, and that's get vaccinated. That's it. Those are those two words. After that, three words, scratch the upsetter. Stay tuned right here. WUSB!
Peacemakers Come up, come up, music power. Come up, come up, come up, come up.